5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It was like the rich and affluent, and only when you reach a certain position in your organization could you avail air travel. It isn't like today where, you know, you have these low-cost airlines. And in economy class, whether you bought the ticket 6 months before or a year before, you still had to pay the same fare.
Indians didn't travel much throughout the 80s, outside the country, that is. And those who did had to jump through several bureaucratic hoops. It wasn't a matter of simply submitting copies in triplicate, but explaining to the government why you wanted to visit and having them decide how much money you could carry. As for purchasing tickets, all the best with that. In such a scenario, travel agents were a godsend. Today we have for you a story of a woman who worked with several travel agencies and had a ringside view of just how air travel functioned in the days before the reforms opened up the skies.
My name is Azra Ali Abbas and my age is 52 years. I grew up in Mumbai. It was always a city on the move. And like, if you can survive there, you can survive anywhere.
Right, so where were you staying in Bombay?
We were staying in Mazgaon, right. Over there. And I had my schooling in St. Isabel's and in a college in Sapphires. Almost all the girls I knew were being educated. So it was a very liberal upbringing. And I thank my parents for giving me that kind in that time. Because that education of mine has stood me in good stead throughout my life.
On the surface, Azra's story might seem very simple, that of a working woman from the 80s, but dig a little deeper and there are interesting layers. Azra was a very young woman when she got married. Within a year, she was mother to a baby and her marriage was over. If you think divorce, even with increasing acceptance today, is difficult, imagine what it was like for her in the 80s.
30 years ago, divorce was taboo. Even if it was domestic violence, incompatibility, you were supposed to just go and live, and dowry demands, you still had to live with that man. And it was always the woman who was at fault. And because of it, I just moved away from the society and also from a few relatives who wouldn't understand.
A 2015 report in Hindustan Times on divorce reveals the following statistics. Till even a decade ago, the divorce rate in India was 1 in 1,000. Today, it has gone up marginally by 13 per 1,000. For sure, it's not an unheard of phenomenon and no longer something that happens to someone you know who knows someone. In fact, we will stick our necks out here and say that you probably know more than one person, a friend or a family member, who is either ending a marriage or has ended one. Society still remains uncertain about how it feels over this issue. But in Azra's time, the condemnation was unequivocal. She moved to Chennai, where her parents now lived, and while they were supportive, there was the matter of money. But what job could a simple college graduate opt for in a closed economy?
At that time, I was in the 20s, and it was very important for me to get a job. But in those times, the opportunities were very limited.
Yes,
it was either teaching, nursing, or you had to be a doctor.
Azra took a diploma course in travel and tourism before she joined a travel agency. Those were the days of not just endless paperwork, but also of filling it in all by hand. We all remember laboring over visa forms that seemed endless, a far cry from the swift two-page affairs they are today. Now imagine working with a mini mountain of them and similar other stuff.
Like they made you do everything from scratch, like fill up the forms. They are called P forms, which the RBI required. So anybody who was traveling either on her leisure, on pleasure or business trip or pilgrimage had to give a lot of details about them. Any travel abroad, you were entitled to US$500 mm-hmm. only. So tourists, like, you had to think and then spend. And for neighboring countries, it was like a restriction of $250.
So what is this P form? It was essentially a form that sought permission from the Reserve Bank of India to let you travel abroad. Just an interesting aside here. In 1970, the Indian government started a foreign travel scheme. This allowed Indians to travel abroad once in 3 years. Then in 1978, Indians were allowed to travel every alternate year. And there remained a cap of how much foreign exchange you could take with you. In 1978, it was $500. It continued to be that princely sum till the mid-1980s, as our earlier interviewee Wade Nethani had recalled. And this amount was meticulously noted on the back of your passport. Today, of course, there are no such restrictions.
Manual tickets were like a document which was carbonized, and there you have the name of the passenger, the sector, everything, and then the fare, so you had to work out the fares.
Let me tell you an anecdote. I plead guilty, it's about me. In my late teens, towards the end of the century, I had to travel to Mumbai from Delhi on my own. The ticket was a reassuring weight in my hand, a booklet with lots of seemingly technical details and my name and age printed on it. Trip completed, I threw the booklet in the dustbin, except for when I had to return to Delhi. For you see, the return ticket was in the same booklet as well. No wonder the weight felt so reassuring. Today, when I simply show the ticket on my phone or have it mailed to me when I misplace it, I think back to the panicky 18-year-old rummaging in a dustbin, hoping to God that it was still there. We weren't the only ones to consider tickets precious. For the travel agencies, which were issued these by foreign airlines, which were akin to, in Azra's words, a blank check.
Like raffle tickets, you couldn't lose them.
Because if that ticket, it is invaluable because it's like a blank check.
So they were kept locked up.
Yes, they were kept locked up in a locker. And when we needed it for a group or for an individual, then each person had to sign in a register and take accountability for it.
Azra worked with an agency that served as a general sales agent for Saudi Airlines in India. GSAs, as she explained to us in her pre-interview conversations, were agencies appointed by airlines that did not have offices in the country. There are several GSAs functioning even today. Since her agency dealt specifically with Saudi, the clientele she dealt with was mostly blue collar.
In this airline, it was mostly for the laborers mm-hmm. because a lot of laborers were being recruited for Saudi Arabia for the construction, everything. And you felt sorry because they wouldn't understand what is actually happening. You'd have these people coming from the villages and just sitting outside your office, you know, bag and baggage, because just waiting for that one seat. But you felt sorry. I remember one instant when one of the laborers, when his seat got cleared, he was so happy. There was nothing he could give. He brought a jackfruit and he gave us, you know. So that we started laughing at that moment. But it is something that really touched us because that's the only thing he had and he could afford. Right. Then the other kind of passengers who went there were the pilgrims who go for Umrah and for Hajj.
The first impact of reforms, as Azra identified it, was the coming in of different airlines. Suddenly, flying was not a matter of privilege, but comfort. And there were jobs in the market galore. But it was not meant to be for her.
Yeah, that changed the entire scenario because a lot of airlines started coming. Kuwait Airways, Emirates, and Lufthansa, British Airways, and these all European airlines, whereas the Gulf carriers also made inroads into Chennai, Mumbai, and recruiting staff directly from
sales staff,
counter staff,
But did you ever apply for any of these jobs?
Yeah, I did apply for British Airways, Lufthansa, but it's just that the European carriers preferred freshers.
As Azra saw it, reforms changed the way India travelled. Customers were spoiled for choice. Little did she know, however, that the mid-90s were just the beginning of the change. By the time the next century would come along, low-cost airlines would enter the market, making flying not just convenient, but very democratic. everyone was flying now and flying to places that earlier did not even have an airport.
Now, like how things we have changed now. And nobody thinks of anything because low-cost airlines, you till the last moment you get fares and everything, you know, you can pick and choose. And there are so many more airlines.
But the same reforms that led to such a change also sounded the death knell for traditional travel agents. Sure, they were middlemen at the mercy of the airlines, but important nonetheless. From a 9% commission to now struggling for survival, from what was once considered a lucrative profession, complete with tickets to a foreign destination once a year, has now become an almost defunct job.
We as agents were very dependent on the airlines for seats. Like if we couldn't commit and tell the agent, there was no concept of for an individual to go online or on and just book a seat and depending. It was, he had to come to a travel agent. The travel agent was at the mercy of the airlines and you had to give them gifts and a lot of parties and everything. So to keep them happy, and then they would allot the seats to you.
Oh, the agency business, they used to get a 9% commission from the airlines on which they survived and also thrived. But the moment this things happen online, a lot of travel agencies have just shut down. There was considerable downsizing and it wasn't a very lucrative profession. So people moved on to others, like, you know, even call centers were paying better. And then it wasn't like a diploma was just not enough. Of course, you had to have a professional degree. So a lot of girls started taking up engineering.
It wasn't just the agents who had a difficult time adjusting. Initially, customers weren't very happy with e-tickets either. They preferred booklets. They wanted the comfort of an agent who they could meet face to face and call in time of an emergency. Satish Kumar, who runs a Delhi-based travel agency and was interviewed for Days of Our Lives, still cites this as his biggest strength. But needless to say, over the years, the takers for this advantage have considerably declined. His business now mostly comes from corporate retreats. Personal travellers are a very small percentage of his business.
And people were also very, you know, they were not very comfortable with the concept of going online. They said, you know, in case, what is this? They're not just a printout. They were so used to having a proper ticket, you know, with 4-5 leaflets and the proper doc kit. So they also wanted to do it, you know, face to face.
Azra quit her job in 2005, just as the online and low-cost carrier boom in India was taking off. But she remains an interested observer. She's amazed at just how everyone travels today, whereas in her days, one had to be either really rich or desperate to leave the country. And those who left rarely ever came back. She uses online portals herself now for ticket booking. But don't get her started on just how difficult it's to cancel or change a booking. Our days, she tells us, were much better. Interview conducted by Sunira Tandon. This podcast has been